This is Your Life is Their Toy. Merchants in Medicine by Dr. Emanuel Josephson from 1948. This is part 14. Fishbein claims drug dictatorship. At the Rochester meeting of the American Chemical Society in September 1937, Fishbein, drunk with the powers which he had been permitted to usurp over the chemical and drug industries of the country, threw caution to the winds and voiced his ambition and intent to set up for himself an absolute monopoly of the drug business. He proposed that the American Medical Association, in other words, himself, be given control of all medical discoveries and patents, and more immediately of the patents which have been developed in the universities of the country. Patenting of medical discoveries, he justified with the statement, quote, "Why should a physician give freely to everyone the product of his brain when the state refuses longer to consider him as a philanthropic worker for the benefit of mankind?" Unquote. He therefore seeks, he said, to rectify the social injustice to the physician, but not by permitting the individual to enjoy the fruit of his research labors. He wishes to bar any such contingency because of the quote-unquote corrupting influence of an honest reward to the individual physician for his labors. Likewise, he discerns a, quote, corrupting influence, unquote, on universities which hold medical patents and enjoy the financial returns therefrom. Industry, he said, certainly cannot be trusted. Dr. Fishbein can only see one solution for eliminating the corrupting influence of the millions of dollars that now flow from medical discovery and invention. Their diversion into the pockets of his incorruptible self and of his clique. He trusts himself alone. Even the New York Times, which staunchly has supported the medical rackets when they do not conflict with the social service, was moved to comment upon Fishbein's proposal, September 5th, 1937, in the following vein, quote, "There is no evidence that a virtually monopolistic control by a single organization of all meritorious patents taken out by physicians and professors in universities is desirable," unquote. A needed reform in medical patents. A reform in medical patents of another character is urgently needed. Most of the essential life-saving drugs that have been developed by recent chemical and medical research, such as the gland hormones, have become subject to such merciless and intensive exploitation, and the profits demanded by their patent owners is so exorbitant that they are entirely beyond the reach of all but the wealthiest patients. In many instances, the German Dye Trust and their allies alone profit. This situation means the denial of health, sanity, and life to hosts of ill. The solution indicated is the reverse of that advocated by Fishbein, turning over the patents to the AMA for exploitation. The patent laws should be amended to cause all such patents to revert to the government for public welfare, and to provide a pension for the inventor. France denies any patents on drugs, but this is not wise, for it offers no incentive for discovery and invention. The patent pension plan stimulates research and discovery. This reform would do more to bring down the cost of medical care than any socialized medical plan. New Jersey Society demands investigation. capping the climax of cumulative proof of the utter dishonesty and untrustworthiness of the entire food and drug acceptance racket of the American Medical Association, is the evidence given by one of the constituent societies of the American Medical Association, the New Jersey State Medical Society, at its annual convention, May 2, 1935, adopted a resolution condemning its parent organization, the American Medical Association, for racketeering in foods and drugs. It read as follows, quote, "Whereas the Committee on Food and the Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry and the Investigations Bureau of the American Medical Association have exercised selections unwarrantably in the notices of judgment they have published, and have permitted the licensee to use their seal on the advertisements of products that are even at the same time being successfully prosecuted by libel actions under the food and drug law, and whereas it is our duty as physicians to assume leadership in promoting free and open discussion of a condition concerning which we should have expert knowledge if we had honest information, therefore be it resolved that the New Jersey State Medical Society do hereby urge, and as representative of the ethical physicians of the United States, do hereby demand a complete congressional investigation of the enforcement of the present pure food and drug law, the investigating committee to have full power to call individuals and records under oath before any new pure food and drug legislation be enacted by Congress," unquote. What could more perfectly prove the corrupt political nature of the organization of the American Medical Association than the fact that the political bosses of the association, under Fishbein's leadership, barred the introduction of this resolution of a constituent society at the annual meeting of the association? Of equally serious import is the fact that no newspaper published these highly important and sensational charges and resolutions. A menace to the public. Enough has been related to indicate that even were the officers of the American Medical Association men of the highest integrity, their arbitrary control of the drug industry would constitute a menace to the interests of the community, as unwarranted, as are absurd, the pretensions of its editor and counsel to omniscience and infallibility. Such tremendous and arbitrary power over an industry, the business of which reaches values of billions of dollars annually, with profits which reach hundreds of millions, is beset with temptations which few honest mortals could resist. But medical politicians and bosses of organized medicine are rarely honest. The representatives of the AMA openly acknowledged betrayal of public confidence in the hearings during the investigation of the administration of the Federal Food and Drug Act by the United States Senate Committee on Agriculture and Forestry of the 71st Congress. The temptation to convert new and important drugs into secret remedies to be used for the enhancement of their reputations and incomes is so attractive to the overlords of medicine that they are making it quote-unquote accepted practice. The excuse offered the public is that the remedies are undergoing clinical testing. The implication is that the rank and file of the profession are not competent to judge the effects of drugs on their patients. If that be true, They must also be adjudged incompetent to practice medicine. For practice requires constant evaluation of the effects of drugs and treatments on variably responding patients. The excuse is obviously false. In the creation of a group of secret remedies, the quote-unquote acceptance racket is now supported by the new Food and Drug Act. Its ridiculous restrictions, which mark an extreme swing of the pendulum in the direction of absurd caution, bars the public from the benefits of many drugs of the highest value unless they pay high fees to medical quote-unquote leaders who alone use them. Drugs like histaminase for the relief of serum sickness and allergy, and corticosterone, the active principle of the adrenal gland cortex, were widely used abroad for many years before they were admitted to use in the U.S. Under the impossible terms of our Drug Act, the introduction of such drugs is long delayed, and some may never be admitted for use in this country unless the AMA and its council see fit to approve them. The setup for extortion of the public, blackmailing of the drug trade, and monopoly of the industry is perfect. As the subsidiaries of the subsidized German dye cartel say, only the most quote-unquote efficient firms will survive. What is possibly the most flagrant violation of the interests of the public and of the medical profession is the deliberate stimulation by the American Medical Association of the use of denatured foods that have been robbed of nutrient value, in return for the placement of high-priced advertising in its magazines. Thus, the American Medical Association, through Dr. A. J. Cramp, of its Department of Investigation and Propaganda, offered to Dr. Barnard of the Baking Institute, in a statement published in the January 1925 issue of Baking Technology, to propagandize the medical profession and the public and lead them to believe falsely that white bread is, quote, most wholesome, unquote. This offer resulted in much high-priced, full-page advertising by Miller's and by the American Institute of Baking in the journal of the AAA and its popular magazine, Hygieia. Thus, by betraying the interests of the public and its health and the medical profession, the American Medical Association bosses were enabled to tap rich new sources of revenue and graft. The Council on Foods of the Association naturally prepared the way for the advertising by quote-unquote accepting degerminated wheat, bleached with benzoyl peroxide and nitrogen trioxide, as in the case of Dakota-made flour. Journal of the AMA, March 13th, 1937, page 885. Chapter 7, Medical Education, a Racket. The caliber of medical services rendered to the community is largely dependent upon the quality of the basic training which the physician receives in the course of his education, and upon the facilities which the graduate physician has for keeping abreast of medicine and its advances. It is unfortunate for the community that both of these processes are so highly commercialized that they deserve no better designation than rackets. In past centuries, a medical student, after receiving fundamental scientific instruction, received his training as an assistant to a practicing physician. Inasmuch as the practice of medicine is an art which involves flexible application of medical and other sciences, such preceptor training in medicine is the only form that is safe and proper. The student receives individual training and instruction, and the application of his knowledge is watched closely in order to safeguard the lives of patients entrusted to his care. The origin of the modern medical school can be traced to the commercial ambition of medical leaders of the past century. Their incomes from teaching were often larger than from practice. Thus, Dr. David Hossack of New York City reported that in the years 1826 to 1829, he made $1,400 from his private students and assistants. An idea of the relative magnitude of such an income can be sensed from the fact that, with it, Dr. Hossack was able to indulge in the luxury of a botanical garden on the site of the New York City Public Library. Teaching physicians also observed that their assistants, when launched into independent medical practice, continued to call them out on well-paid consultations. It dawned upon some of them that if one assistant or student would call them on 5 consultations per year, 100 medical students would probably call them on 500 consultations per year, and their incomes and practice would thus be multiplied. The entire history of medicine in the U.S. has been characterized by a mad scramble for the commercial profits of teaching medicine. This is illustrated by the history of the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Columbia University. History of the College of Physicians and Surgeons, Columbia University. The first medical school in New York was that of King's College, now Columbia University, founded in 1768. It was short-lived because of factional strife in medicine in New York City. When Dr. Nicholas Romaine, in 1791, requested the regents of the University of the State of New York to supervise his private medical school, Columbia University blocked the organization of the school by politics until 1807. Organized as the College of Physicians and Surgeons, Dr. Romaine's school merged with Columbia University in 1813. Between 1809 and 1814, the state approved lotteries for the medical schools. From the lottery of 1809, the College of Physicians and Surgeons received $5,000, which constituted the chief lure for the belated merger. Universities have regarded medical schools as good businesses because they could be made to pay. But the College of Physicians and Surgeons was not much of a financial success for Columbia University, for the cream of the profits was drawn off by the professors, who collected their tuition fees directly from the students. So lucrative was the college to the quote-unquote professors that they were willing to lend it $20,000 out of their own purses. Some professors earned as much as $8,000 a year from their jobs. The large income derived from medical schools by the professors and their unfair competition, made possible by the advertising of the school, aroused the jealousy of the trustees of the college and of the medical profession. Jealous commercial quarrels raged continually between the competing professors over sharing of the money and business, and became public scandals. The war of the medical schools. These jealous bickerings reached a climax in 1826. Envy of the large professional income of Dr. David Hossack, who represented the socially elite element in the community, and of his income from private instruction, started a war between factions on the faculty of the College of Physicians and Surgeons. Charges were brought against him and other professors by the trustees of the college, which alleged favoritism, misappropriation of funds, and oppression. It is interesting to note that several years prior, in 1819, the college was charged by the New York City Medical Society with falsification of records of students, failure to hold public examinations, and favoritism in granting degrees to unqualified students. This last charge is interesting because the practice still continues. As a result of this disreputable conduct, the charter of the college was amended. The charter originally granted the college, made the profession, and the entire medical society of the city and county of New York the Board of Trustees. In 1816, the number was cut to 21. In 1826, so well had the physicians discredited themselves with their bickering that the law was amended to require that 10 of the trustees be laymen. The appointment of these trustees rested with the regents of the University of the State of New York, who negotiated between the college and legislature. The balance of power was given by this act to the laymen. As remonstrance against the legislation which ousted them from the control of the business of the physicians and surgeons, Dr. Hossack and his professors resigned. With a charter secured from Rutgers University, they proceeded to establish a rival medical school. This was an eloquent commentary on the political power of Dr. Hossack and his clique. For in earlier years, they had always succeeded in blocking the establishment of a medical school under the Rutgers University charter by their rivals. The attitude of the quote-unquote professors is revealed by the regent's report to the legislature on the condition of the school in 1827, which is quoted from the report of the trustees of the college as follows, quote, "The unfortunate state of the college during the last winter, with the circumstance of another medical school having been established in this city, under the patronage of a college in a neighboring state, has had an effect which is to be regretted. To these causes may be ascribed the diminished number of students attending the college at this time. The college, since its reorganization, has gone into operation with brighter prospects of success in many respects than have been witnessed in many years. The professors, being now confined to their proper sphere of teaching, have no longer the power nor the disposition to interfere with the government of the college. Thus, discord, suspicion, and strife have given way to harmony, confidence, and good feeling." Unquote. In the following years, 1828 and 1829, the College of Physicians and Surgeons found itself in dire straits. It was indebted to its former professors to the extent of $20,000. It called upon the New York State Legislature to aid by paying off the debt and by denying a charter to the competitive Rutgers Medical College. The professors alleged that the rival professors would use the money paid to them to drive the physicians and surgeons out of business. The HOSAC group replied that it was the superiority of their medical school that was driving the physicians and surgeons out of business. By 1830, the Rutgers Medical College closed its doors. During all this passage at arms and quote-unquote conflict of ideals of these merchants in medicine, never once were the interests of the public or of the students considered. Instead, a higher income was assured to the professors from the tuition fees of $15 per course by increasing the length of attendance required to 2 years. During both years, the students were compelled to attend the same courses of lectures. This concludes part 14 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine by Dr. Emanuel Josephson from 1948.